sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song, the melody.
Welcome to Subtle Beast, everybody. I am your host, Foltz. Sitting here with my main man and my co-host, Mr. Steve Apostolopoulos. Steve, how are you, buddy?
What's up, Matthew? How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I've been waiting for you to come back from your trip, and I just wanted to say, I wanted to throw out real quickly that I apologize to any of our listeners that were waiting for this past week's podcast to hit the air. But we still had a little bit of work to do on some podcasts and some tweaking to do. And Steve was out in Vegas, but we're back, and we'll give you a heads up from now on if it's not going to be on the regular date or time that you're used to grabbing our podcast. And I want to hear about Steve's trip to Vegas. Steve, how was that?
Oh, gosh, dude, I feel like I've come so far to be on this podcast, and all it's been is just coming home.
Right.
Oh, dude, it's like halfway across the country. Man, Vegas is far. That flight is crazy.
Oh, it is. It is a very long flight. I've done it many times, and I've dreaded it each and every time.
Bro, they say the greater the tension, the greater the release. But I tell you, when you land in Vegas, you are like wound up and ready to go.
I hear that. Now, I know that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, so you can't really tell us a whole lot. But
I'm not going to. I'm not going to tell you too much.
Okay. How about some highlights, maybe?
I'll tell you this. We went out there for my wife and I celebrated our 5-year wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much, because we figured it was a time to kind of just show each other a lot of love and get out there and celebrate this anniversary. So we did things in a together nature. So we were together for the entire trip, and I give a lot of respect to her for the way that she travels. You know, she's not a needy person out on the road. She's ample when it comes to the skill level of travel. She can take care of herself, and I was very happy with the way that she handled herself on the trip.
So fly by the seat of her pants kind of gal.
Yeah, man. She grabs a bag, and she's ready to go this way, that way, whatever.
Nice. Well, at least tell us this. Did you win any money?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course. We won a ton of money, but, I mean, we lost a ton of money, too, so.
Hey, look at it this way. You didn't have to dig into the bank account for things that you had to
Right, yeah. We didn't spend any more than we wanted to spend. We had a set limit of what we were going to spend, and the money that we won helped out with, all the expenses that go along with Vegas.
Well, very good. Well, we're happy to have you back here in Studio 1B at Subtle Beast, and we're ready to get this show going once again.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was a great vacation, and many, many great vacations to come for our family, for your family. I know that your family is a big vacationing family too, right?
Yeah, we are. We are. We like to, we have our certain hot spots that we like to hit up, but recently, we've been looking at maybe taking the family on a cruise, because I used to do a lot of cruising with my family when I was younger, and but we're thinking about maybe taking a cruise to Bermuda sometime here in the near future.
Man, that sounds fantastic.
The Bermuda cruise is, and I've done it six times.
Six times?
Six times. I did it twice with a buddy of mine and four times with my family. But I have to say, to be completely honest, to do it six times and be as lucky as we've been to actually come out of Bermuda and the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, you're talking about the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, it's something that was on my mind every time you take a cruise to, or you're even in the vicinity of Bermuda. You got to wonder to yourself, is this cruise ship ever going to see the light of day again in this particular world, I guess.
Right. I mean, there's tons of ships that have gone in there and just have never come out.
Well, actually, stating that, last year there was a ship that had been missing for 90 years.
90 years.
And it just recently came up on, like, Cuban radar, and they saw it like heading towards, you know, the shore of Cuba. And so they sent out part of their military and they boarded the ship. And lo and behold, it was this old ship that set sail back in 1925, and no one ever knew what happened to it or where it's been or anything. And lo and behold, it shows up 90 years later. I mean, I saw some pictures of it. I mean, it was beat. It was rusty.
It would have to be.
Yeah, but it just begs the question. I mean, this ship was huge. It was humongous. And for no one to come across this for 90 years, I mean, I have to think that it fell victim to some of the craziness that goes on in the Bermuda Triangle.
And there is a ton of craziness that occurs there. There's so many different anomalies that can occur there, such as compass readings.
Right.
If you're in the Bermuda Triangle and you have a compass and you're trying to navigate the waters, there's a few places on the Earth, the North Pole, the South Pole, and the Bermuda Triangle, where it's scientifically been proven that compass readings will not show true north.
Right.
So you could be following your compass, and then at some point in time, the compass reading could change, and you could now veer off course and somewhat go in a circle. It just...
Well, yeah. Think back, you know, before technology had caught up with us, all the explorers like Christopher Columbus, and you know, even going back further than him, I mean, they're depending on their compass or they're looking at the stars. But imagine being in a ship way back when, built just simply out of wood. You're traveling in an area that's between 440 to 500,000 square miles in the ocean. And you can't tell where you are, or what direction you're going, or anything, which would be really, really scary, because at least 1,000 lives have been lost within the last 100 years. On average, 4 aircraft and 20 yachts go missing every year in the Bermuda Triangle.
That means the Bermuda Triangle loves yachts.
It does, and I'm glad that it doesn't love cruise ships, or else...
If you're on a private yacht, man, and you're making your way to the Bermuda Triangle, you better turn your ass around.
Yeah, you better get out of there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's never been any proof of, you know, what actually goes on there. I mean, granted, there's malfunctioning compasses, and I'm sure there's a ton of other things, but you know, there's also, you know, people have claimed that that it could be due to UFOs or time warps or time slips. Or
I've heard of both of those before. I've heard that particular area is a larger attractant for UFOs to take samples, because the ships, some of the ships that do show up on the shores, show up with no crew.
Right.
It's a desolate ship that's just been abandoned. And that begs the question of, well, where did the crew go?
Yeah, because I doubt that something would have happened that they all wanted to just jump overboard and try and swim where they had no idea where they are. So could it have been that a UFO came from over and abducted everybody?
Could have. I mean, very good possibility.
It could have been. I mean, Christopher Columbus was one of the first people to report, and he actually had written in his journals about fireballs in the sky and fireballs hitting the Atlantic Ocean, seeing all kinds of strange lights in the sky. So, I mean... So if Columbus was getting close to, well, he thought was India, but actually was America, and he's seeing fireballs in the sky and all kinds of lights. I mean, back then, there's no aircraft or anything, so I can't even imagine what they must have been thinking.
Yeah, it would be much easier for their minds to be blown nowadays with all the technology that our kids have and 3D and stuff. People look up and they're like,
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are jaded now. I mean, a lot of people will just dismiss. I mean, I'm not one of those people to dismiss. Now, however, I'm not one to just assume that, oh, well, that's a UFO. If I see something, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I can tell that that's an airplane. But if there's something strange going on in the air, I'm not going to be like, well, it's got to be such and such. No, I'm not one. And so I can't even imagine what Christopher Columbus was going through. But
yeah, there is definitely a chance that there could be portals that open down there and slip ships into different time or different parallel universes.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm sure everyone's heard of the lost city of Atlantis. Well, the city of Atlantis is directly under the triangle.
Right, and they have found some of the lost city of Atlantis. They found a place known as the Bimini Road, and that was what they had thought was part of the lost city of Atlantis, and it was directly under the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, wow. Well, I hadn't heard that. So, well, if they found that, they weren't able to find any other remains of Atlantis?
No, because the depth of some of the crevices underneath the Bermuda Triangle go down to up to 28,000 feet. So even if they use sonar or other forms of technology, they cannot get a clear view of what is underneath 28,000 feet of water.
So, I mean, so, you know, if you're looking at it from a practical standpoint, a lot of people could say, well, if all these ships are disappearing, then they went down in these big trenches, so that can explain if sonar doesn't go down that far, then that's obviously what has happened. But what about the aircraft of today? I mean, it's stated in some of the texts that I was reading that at least four aircraft a year go down there. Well, I mean, they got the black box on them. I mean, that can ping. Now, I know that we were reading something. Steve read something to me earlier during pre-show that they thought that the missing Malaysian airline. People were saying, well, maybe it was lost in the Bermuda Triangle, but of course, that was on the other side of the world.
Right. Malaysia Airlines flight MH370, even though the jet went missing halfway around the world, could still be attributed to the Bermuda Triangle.
But if you recall, when that airline actually went down, they were keeping in contact with that black box for a long time. And then at severe, severe depths, they kept getting pinging. And that was the only hope that they really had that they were ever going to find it. So, yeah, I mean, I can go with that. You know, some ships are lost in these big crevices and things of that nature. But as far as to never be able to find an aircraft with all kinds of technology on board, I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's nobody that can say with any certainty what really goes on in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, but you're not even getting an SOS out.
Right. Right.
Something's happening.
Something is definitely happening. And this, like we were saying, this isn't something that has been, you know, brought up within the last 100 years or so. The Bermuda Triangle has been taking people and aircraft and ships and all kinds of passengers going through there for many, many years. I mean,
almost 250 years.
Yeah, there was, I think it was back in, I think 1945, there were five airplanes that were taken off. I believe they belonged to the Navy. And they were just going to be running on like a routine training course. And it took them they were out at sea, and they took off from probably, well, obviously by an aircraft carrier, and they were just supposed to go out to touch like the tip of Florida and then fly down close to Cuba and just come back. Well, these five aircraft, they started reporting that they were getting disoriented and all their instruments on their planes weren't giving them correct readings, and that they were looking all around, you know, out the windows of their planes, and they're not even seeing the other four aircraft now. And each of these five aircraft are all reporting the same thing. Can't see the other guys. We don't know how we got separated from them. Everything's malfunctioning. And we're flying in the wrong direction. And then all of a sudden, all communication was lost. So they decided, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to send out a scout plane now, a six plane, and we're going to go see if we can at least get in contact with one or two of these planes, round them all up, and see if we can bring them back. Well, when the six plane took off and started heading out, once it hit the Bermuda Triangle, now he's reporting, my stuff's malfunctioning, I don't see any of these planes, and then nothing. They lost the six plane. Nothing's ever been found of any of the planes, and nobody knows what happened to these. So, I mean, that's a pretty crazy story to have happen. Five planes all take off together. They're supposed to stay in formation the whole time. They all get disoriented. They all get separated. They all lose communication with the aircraft carrier and the Navy. They send out a scout plane. Same thing happens. I don't know. That's bizarre to me.
That one was documented by the U.S. government, the military. So
right,
that one you got to believe that one. You send your five planes out; they're on a routine bombing run. Then something happens; you lose your communication. So you send your rescue plane out, and then the rescue plane doesn't have any communication with you as well. What do? You keep sending planes out,
I can only imagine because. The people that were running the radar for this mission were reporting that just like blip by blip, these planes were just disappearing off of the radar. But none of them were giving an SOS or anything like that. At the time that they just disappeared from the blip, they're just saying, well, the instruments are malfunctioning. And I'm looking around and I don't see any of the other planes. So obviously, they're still up in the air and they just disappear from the radar. I mean, even if the planes would have went down and crashed into the ocean, they would have stayed on radar till they got to, I'm sure, a certain height and then disappeared. But that doesn't seem to be the case. So I don't know. I really don't.
That one baffles me. I don't know how six separate planes can all go missing at the same time. And it's documented by the U.S. Navy. That one floors me.
Yeah, it really is something to marvel over and quite frankly to be nervous about. I mean, I really don't know. Now I'm trying to see. There's a really, really interesting story about about three guys and one most famously, there's a guy, his name is Bruce Gernon, and I have a pretty interesting story to tell if you want me to tell it.
I've the Bruce Gernon story is great. I can't wait to hear you tell it.
Okay, well, it starts off Bruce Gernon, his father and one other gentleman had been flying in and around the Bahamas since 1967. And they've made at least a dozen flights to and from a place called Andros Island. Well, on the day that they took this famous flight, everything seemed normal. It was a December day, 1970, just after 3 p.m., when Bruce and his dad and his friend, a business associate, lifted off the runway at Androstown Airport and a brand new Beechcraft Bonanza A36. It was shortly after takeoff when they noticed an elliptical cloud directly in front of them about a mile away, hovering only about 500 feet above the ocean. It was a typical lenticular cloud. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Lenticular is what it looks like. But they had never seen one that low. Miami Flight Services reported over the VHF radio that the weather was good, so they continued. But the cloud quickly changed into a huge cumulus cloud. They were climbing at about 1,000 feet per minute, and the cloud seemed to be building up at the same rate. It caught up and engulfed the Bonanza. After about 10 minutes of climbing in and out of this cloud, the airplane finally broke free at 11,500 feet and the sky was clear. They leveled off the Bonanza and accelerated to its maximum safe cruising speed of 195 miles per hour. When they looked out the back of the cloud, they were astonished. It now looked like an immense squall, abnormally shaped in the form of a giant semicircle extending all around them. Visibility was at about 10 miles, and the cloud continued beyond their perception, so it must have been more than 20 miles long. After a few minutes, they lost sight of it. Soon they noticed another cloud building directly in front of them, near the Bimini Islands, which you had mentioned earlier.
The Bimini Road.
Yeah. And it looked a great deal like the cloud that had just left them, except that its top was at least 60,000 feet high. When they came within a few miles of it, they saw that it appeared to emanate directly from the surface of the Earth. Upon entering the cloud, they witnessed an uncanny spectacle. It became dark, black, without rain, and visibility was about 4 or 5 miles. There were no lightning bolts, only extraordinary bright white flashes that would illuminate the entire surrounding area. The deeper they penetrated, the more intense the flashes became. So they made a 135-degree turn and left and headed due south out of the cloud. They had been flying for about 27 minutes, and they thought we might be able to fly around the cloud, but after 6 or 7 miles, they saw that it continued in a near-perfect curve to the east. After 2 more minutes, it became apparent that the cloud near Andros and the cloud near Bimini were actually opposite sides of the same ring-shaped body. The cloud must have formed just off the Andros Island and then rapidly spread outward into the shape of a donut with a diameter of 30 miles. It seemed impossible to them that there was no explanation for it. They were trapped inside a billowing prison and no way under or over it. So they traveled about 13 miles more, and then they noticed a large U-shaped opening on the west side of the donut cloud. They had no choice but to turn and try and exit through the opening, and as they approached, they watched the top ends of the U-gap join, forming a hole. The break in the cloud then formed a perfect horizontal tunnel, 1 mile wide and more than 10 miles long. That would be freaky.
Yeah.
And then they said they could see the clear blue sky on the other side of that. They also saw that the tunnel was rapidly shrinking. So now they got to speed up and they got to get out. It looks like it's closing in on them. So that they did exactly that. They increased their engine speed, bringing their speed to, the danger area, the caution area, 230 miles per hour. When they entered the tunnel, its diameter had narrowed to only 200 feet. They were amazed at what the shaft had now looked like. It appeared to be only a mile long instead of 10 plus, and had a ridge, which they had originally estimated. Light from the afternoon sun had shone through the exit hole and made the silky white walls glow. The walls were perfectly round and slowly constricting. All around the edges were small puffs of clouds of a contrasting gray swirling counterclockwise around the airplane. They were in the tunnel for only about 20 seconds before they emerged from the other end. For about 5 seconds, they had a strange feeling of weightlessness, and an increased forward momentum. When they looked back, all of them gasped to see that the tunnel walls collapsed and formed a slit that slowly rotated clockwise. All of their electronic and magnetic navigational instruments were malfunctioning, just like all other planes and boats that come through there. The compass was slowly spinning even as the airplane flew straight. They contacted Miami and told them that they were about 45 miles southeast of Bimini, heading east at 10,500 feet. The radar controller replied that he was unable to identify us anywhere in that area. So something really bizarre had happened. Instead of the blue sky that they had expected, everything was dull, grayish, white haze. visibility seemed more than 2 miles, yet they could not see the ocean, the horizon, or the sky. The air was very stable, and there was no lightning or rain. They like to refer to this as electronic fog, because it seemed to be what was interfering with the instruments. I had to use my navigation to feel our way west, he stated. They were in electronic fog for 3 minutes, when the controller radioed that he had identified an airplane directly over Miami Beach, flying due west. They had looked out and saw that they had been flying for less than 34 minutes. They could not yet have reached Miami Beach. They should have been approaching the Bimini Islands. They told the controller that he must have identified another plane and that they were approximately 90 miles southwest of Miami and still looking for Bimini. Suddenly, the fog started breaking apart in a weird sort of electronic fashion. Long horizontal lines appeared in the fog on either side. The lines widened to slits about 4 or 5 miles long. They saw blue sky through them. The slits continued expanding, and then they joined together. And about 8 seconds later, all the slits had joined, and the gray fog had disappeared. All they could see was a brilliant blue sky, and as their pupils adjusted to the abrupt increase in brightness, they saw the barrier island of Miami Beach directly below. After they landed at Palm Beach, they had realized that the flight had taken a little less than 47 minutes. They thought something had to have been wrong with the airplane's timer, yet all three of their watches showed that it was 3:48 p.m. They had never made it from Andrews to Palm Beach in less than 75 minutes, even on a direct route. But of course, on this flight, this flight was quite indirect and probably covered close to 250 miles. How could the airplane travel 250 miles in 47 minutes? They had taxied to customs, ending the flight, and they didn't talk about this flight for a really long time. They could not logically understand what had happened during the flight, and they felt it was significant and reviewed it in mind several times a day. And then in 1972, they heard about the so-called Bermuda Triangle and the disappearances of boats and airplanes and possible time warps. It was then that they had realized that the time itself was the key. So what it seems like is that on this particular day, they had these strange-looking cloud formations that they had encountered either took them into a different parallel universe, and then that shifted them forward in time, or it was just some type of time paradox.
It sounds like they narrowly got away with their lives.
Well, yeah, because that sounds like it would have been really scary. I mean, they're flying through, and they're seeing the opening of this spiraling cloud, and so they're like, all right, well, we gotta hit the gas. And then they do, and then they start seeing it close in on them, and then they just barely get out. When they look behind them, they see that it had closed. That's like some Indiana Jones stuff when he slides under the wall and just barely makes it through. That story's crazy. I had heard that story years ago, and anytime I hear Bermuda Triangle or even talk about Bermuda, I always think about that one because I think that that's just pure craziness.
Yeah, for that guy, for those three gentlemen to be inside the cloud formation is so dark, and to see the flashing lights and then catch a glimpse of a hole opening and, you know, dive up to the west and then make it through the tube and then land and never talk about it, and then find out that that has happened to a lot of other aircraft, but they didn't get out.
Yeah, and that's what I like about the story the most, is the fact that, you know, it was three people on this airplane and they're all having the same experience. Because anybody could say whatever they want. If they're by themselves, they can make something up or what have you. But three people all having the same experiences, when they land, they're clearly shook up. And to the fact that they didn't even want to speak about it for a while, it's pretty crazy. And I like it.
Yeah, that's how they... That was their experience with the Bermuda Triangle before they even heard the phrase, the Bermuda Triangle.
Right, exactly. So, let's see what else we got here. Okay, well, I found a couple interesting brief stories about people spotting UFOs within the Bermuda Triangle. And I'm going to read this one, because what's crazy about this one is that it actually took place on a cruise ship. So
that one hits home.
Yeah, that one definitely hits home. Now, you know what? I mean, being the fact that I've read through this story, I would have to say that if I experienced this on a cruise ship, I would probably be excited about it. But yeah, here's what they had to say. These people on the cruise ship, it was a mass UFO sighting in 2014. A couple of bright orange-colored UFOs were spotted on the horizons of the Bermuda Triangle by a cruise ship. The lights would look like brightly glowing incandescent vapor lamps, but were much larger than that. After showing up for a couple of minutes, the stationary lights gradually dimmed and completely disappeared. The radar had not been able to confirm the presence of any aircraft in the area at that time. So, that was one. Now, here's another one, strange lights being spotted in 2009. On the 12th of March 2009, people flying through the Bermuda Triangle, as well as naval cameras, have spotted strange lights in the skies over the seas that looks like a vortex, which would remain static for about an hour before vanishing away. The object flying in the sky that could have caused such a vortex could not be identified by witnesses. That's bizarre. So here we have an account of people that actually could see visibly a type of vortex and an unidentified object, and it remained in the area for over an hour before vanishing. And 2009, I would hope that, well, I believe it did say that they were taking pictures. That's going to be something that we have to look up and see what type of images come off of that, because that sounds crazy.
Imagine being on that cruise ship, and then after the sighting, like how every communal place, like you go to the bar and everybody's like, "Yo, did you see it?"
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that would start to cause mass hysteria. Either that, or they would start to think that the cruise ship had some like great light show tonight, and everyone would be like, "Oh, check it out!"
That would be crazy.
Yeah, I mean that. Now the first one of those, the cruise ship with just the seeing the UFOs in the sky, that would be cool, and I would just chalk it up as a nice UFO experience. But the one in 2009, spotting the strange lights in the sky over the sea that looked like a vortex, which would remain static for about an hour before vanishing away. Yeah, I would have to say that one would creep me out pretty good.
Yeah, any vortex. Anytime there's a vortex, that one's...
We don't do vortexes.
That one's just going to blow everybody's mind.
Absolutely. Now, besides the Bermuda Triangle, not a whole lot of people may have heard of some of these places, but there are a handful of other mysterious places around the globe that have similar interactions that take place like in the Bermuda Triangle with like vanishing ships and things of that nature that, you know, people can't explain. And without reason or without it just sounding plain ridiculous. But, you know, whether you believe it's the site of time warps or alien abductions or just plain paranoia, it certainly abounds with strangeness. But here's a couple I have written down here that I think are worthy of noting that could, probably be equivalent to the Bermuda Triangle, if not like, little brothers or sisters to the Bermuda Triangle.
Right.
There's a place called the Superstition Mountains. The Superstition Mountains are, they're a mountain range that they're located, out in Phoenix, Arizona. And I think, from what I've read about these, that it's a great name. According to some legends, sometime in the 1800s, a man named Jacob Waltz discovered a huge gold mine within the mountains that had seemed, or not seemed, that had since been dubbed the Lost Dutchman's Gold Mine. He kept the location a secret until his deathbed, upon which he may or may have not have told a single person the secret. Regardless, the mine has never been found, in spite of many expeditions. Some say the spirits of people who've lost their lives in search of the gold still haunt the mountains, hence the superstition. But one reportedly Native American legend goes that the treasures of the mountains are guarded by creatures called Tortums, which translated means little people, that live below the mountains in caves and tunnels. Some Apaches believe that the entrance is to hell. And this is, of course, ridiculous, or is it, as we all know that the entrance to hell is somewhere else. No, I'm just kidding. So that's another place. I mean, I had never heard of that particular place before, the Superstition Mountains. Have you ever heard of that one?
I've never heard of it. I love the story, and I would not be one of them to go looking for the gold.
No, me neither. I mean, if dude wants to keep his gold all to himself, it's it reminds me. It reminds me of One-Eyed Willie from the Goonies.
Reminds me of the story of Curly. Curly's gold. Remember? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have that one. There's another one called the South Atlantic Anomaly. So, let's see. It's an area centered just a bit off the coast of Brazil, and it's responsible for numerous problems with satellites and spacecraft, from messing up their programs to actually shutting down their function. The Hubble telescope is actually turned off from taking observations when passing through the anomaly, and the International Space Station avoids scheduling spacewalks when passing through it. That's crazy.
That's just scientifically proven. They're like, look.
Yeah.
Turn everything off. We'll see you in 5 minutes.
I mean, yeah, because it's one thing that if you, are driving or you're walking and you seem to lose your bearings or whatever, if you're on the International Space Station, the last thing you want to hear any astronaut say is, we have no idea where we are right now. But I mean, as much as they come across as superstitions, NASA is taking these seriously.
And the Hubble.
Yeah.
The Hubble telescope doesn't even have anybody on it. They turn it off.
Right.
I wonder what pictures they got.
With NASA, it stands for never a straight answer, so we'll never see those pictures. So when the space station avoids scheduling spacewalks, it's not just technical problems either. Some astronauts reported seeing shooting stars in their visual field as they pass through. The cause of all these problems isn't fully understood. The main subject is the high levels of radiation that accumulate at the anomaly, but scientists aren't sure exactly how or why these effects occur. So,
you think it's like a draw? Like, hey, you want to go on a date? You want to walk down to the anomaly?
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what. If someone said that, I'd be like, look, if NASA and their astronauts aren't going near it, I'm not either.
Now, see, the last story I would stay away from. I wouldn't go up into the hills where the Indians say not to go just because of that. I don't think I would go there. Now, this one, totally different. If I get a chance to go to the anomaly and see what's going on, kind of check it out, I would do it.
Subtle Beast is going to go out on location. We're going to be sending Steve into this anomaly. We'll have him mic'd up with a video camera, and we're going to see what he sees.
Yeah, I volunteer to do it.
Stay tuned.
Just, yeah, for the sake of recording it all.
We'll start getting reports from NASA telling us to stay clear.
They're like, you're sending a guy into the anomaly. Get him out of there. What are you thinking? It's an anomaly.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I'll be the guy standing back, writing down everything that you say that you see and you hear. Well, here's another interesting one that I'm not going to be taking a cruise on to anytime soon called the Devil's Sea. The Devil's Sea, or Dragon's Triangle, take your pick, is an area of the Pacific Ocean which is riddled with strange happenings as its Atlantic counterpart near Bermuda. Now, this place is located off the coast of Japan It's been the site of countless claims of unexplained phenomena, including magnetic anomalies, inexplicable lights and objects, and of course, mysterious disappearances. The area is even considered a danger by Japanese fishing authorities. One story that had hit was in 1952. The Japanese government sent out a research vessel, the Keio Maru No. 5, to investigate the mysteries of the Devil's Sea. Well, naturally, of course, the Keio Maru No. 5 and its crew of 31 people were never seen again.
Mm.
And another story tells of the Kublai Khan's disastrous attempt to invade Japan by crossing the Devil's Sea, losing at least 40,000 men in the process. Now imagine that, be like, yeah, they're going to try and pull off like George Washington crossing the Delaware on Christmas. This is going to be a sneak attack through the Devil's Sea.
Ready, go.
Yeah, and if the other army was just waiting like on a near beach, just like, all right, guys, they're going to be here any minute.
Any minute. Keep your rifles pointed.
An hour later. Any minute now.
I don't see anything, sir.
So, yeah.
We won.
Yeah. I mean, well, man, that's
40,000 people.
That's crazy. Yeah. We have victory. Thanks to the Devil's Sea.
Thank you very much, Dragon.
Yep. That's great. Well, I never really have had any desire to go there, so I probably won't, but.
The Pacific, the Japanese Sea?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I go back and forth. Like, I want to go to Japan, but, you know, all the reports that you hear of the air over there, I don't know if it's so healthy for me. So that's why I say that. It's not because of the culture or anything, because I find it fascinating. I'm not so sure that I want to be wearing, like, a oxygen mask the whole time, but.
Right. Yeah, no. If I'm at sea, I want it to be very close to the American border. Like, I don't want to be far out at sea.
Well, me and my wife always have a joke when we're talking about taking trips. And we're just like, let's stay where we can still see the American flag waving in the wind. Because, you know, we might start having a little bit too much fun and we don't know what laws are what. And before you know it, we'll be locked up somewhere.
You're in a Turkish prison.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of that, no. But here's one, and now I heard about this one because it was in a movie called The Mothman Prophecies. Great movie. It's one of those that even if you're, I've watched it a couple times by myself, and I'm just like, oh God, like the hairs of my arms are standing up a little bit. But the first time I ever saw it, I was watching it with my wife, and we were kind of freaked out. But it's called Point Pleasant. Let me just read a little bit about Point Pleasant. Point Pleasant was probably aptly named at one point, but is now so shrouded in tales of mysterious and creepy events as to be nothing but ironic alteration. The most famous of these events involves a creature known as the Mothman, who reputedly terrorizes the small West Virginia community from November 1966 to December 1967. Over 100 different citizens of Point Pleasant are eyewitnesses to the creature, a 7-foot-tall, broad-chested man with hypnotic glowing red eyes and wings that stretch 10 feet long and drag behind him on the ground. The Mothman, who was the subject of both a book and a movie, has many possible explanations. Some believe him to be an extraterrestrial, others a mutant or some type of like, you know, cryptoid or cryptid. And some suggest that the people of Point Pleasant were actually being scared by owls or a sandhill crane. Let me tell you something. I don't know for sure what was going on down there, but from what I saw in the movie and what I've read about this town, these people were not being scared by owls. Because in the movie, I mean, this thing's kind of interacting with people and like reading their minds, and it's trying to give them clues up into what the next big disaster is going to be. So
yeah, you can tell the difference between a sandhill crane and an extraterrestrial.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't, it's time to go get your eyes checked. I would think.
I think my vote on that one is not a mutant. I think that one is an ET.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. And it was funny because in the movie starring Richard Gere, he's talking to a guy that has had similar experiences with the Mothman. Now, he has moved away from Point Pleasant, and he hasn't talked about it for a long time. But when Richard Gere goes to him, he convinces him to give him some information because he wants to talk about it. And he says, you know, I keep getting these phone calls, and he just gives me these, you know, weird clues and this and that. And he was like, why doesn't he just, explain what he wants to say or explain himself to me? And the guy comes back and says, you're talking about something that's so advanced, far beyond what we are. He said, have you ever tried describing yourself to a cockroach? Just like, whoa.
Yeah, that blows you away, man.
Right. Well, not only do we have the Bermuda Triangle, but have you ever heard of the Michigan Triangle?
I have not.
I hadn't either until recently. Now, the Michigan Triangle is another geographical triangle located in the middle of Lake Michigan. It, too, is the site of mysterious disappearances of both land and sea aircraft. Some of the more famous ones include Captain Donner of April 28, 1937. Captain Donner McFarlane was on his way from Erie, Pennsylvania to Port Washington, Wisconsin, and had to pass through the triangle. As the story goes, he was exhausted and retired to his cabin, leaving the second mate to wake him when they neared their destination about 3 hours later. When the second mate went to do so, Donner was not in his cabin anymore, nor was he in the galley, and they did a huge search of the ship, and he was never found. So that's got to be kind of creepy, because he witnessed the guy go into his cabin, and on those cabins there's no like way to get out, because
right,
I mean, you're gonna keep all the open the windows. I mean, if there even is a window, I don't think that it would open per se.
Yeah, a little port, you wouldn't be able to get yourself out.
Right, anyway. And there's not gonna be a door. Definitely not that. That's creepy. And then there's one called Flight 2501. On June 23rd, 1950, Northwest Airlines Flight 2501 was on its way from New York to Minneapolis at the hands of an experienced pilot, Robert C. Lynn, and was carrying 58 passengers. Due to bad weather, when the flight was near Chicago, it changed course and turned over Lake Michigan. Around midnight, Lynn requested permission to drop altitude from 3,500 feet to 2,500 feet without ever specifying a reason. His request was denied, and that was the last communication Flight 2501 ever had. Its last known position was supposedly within the Michigan Triangle.
Oh, they should have just accepted his...
I know. I mean, the only reason I would think that they would deny it is, if there's other aircraft in the area at that altitude. But other than that, I'd be like, why not?
Yeah. I'm requesting dropping altitude. I got
I want to avoid the Michigan Triangle.
Why?
Like, have you heard about Captain Donner?
Because of Captain Donner.
Exactly. Hey, man, if I was aware of that, I definitely would be avoiding.
This request for permission is actually me just telling you that we're going to drop in altitude.
Yeah, I probably would have pulled a Maverick at that point. Yeah, it's time to buzz the tower.
Request of permission to buzz the tower. Negative.
So, negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full. Okay, so here's one with some nice UFO sightings called San Luis Valley. San Luis or San Luis Valley in southern Colorado is an area high in inexplicable phenomena, including UFO sightings and hundreds of unexplained farm animal mutilations. UFO sightings are so common that a woman named Judy Messaline has even set up a UFO watchtower on her property, which has witnessed over 50 UFO sightings since 2000 alone. Some of these are observed by dozens of people at a time. For the UFO skeptics out there, far more chilling are the tales of animal mutilations from the region. They began in 1967 with a horse named Snippy. Snippy was found one morning with her brain missing and her neck bones completely cleaned. Since then, hundreds if not thousands of unexplainable animal mutilations have occurred in the region, sharing several things in common. Firstly, there is never a trace of blood around the animals, and secondly, the animals are all damaged with precision cuts, distinctly not the work of predators. Finally, all the mutilations happen overnight to otherwise healthy creatures. Investigations into the incidents haven't wielded any results, yet they continue to this day. Some farmers report seeing strange lights in the sky the nights before finding a carcass, leading some to believe that extraterrestrials are involved. That is just classic UFO alien stuff right there.
So, would you go to the tower on that lady's property?
Oh, without a doubt.
Even though you're taking the chance of...
Well, I'm not going to be mutilated. I'm not... I mean, technically, I guess I'm an animal, but...
That's true.
So while you're off at where are you going?
I'm going. Where?
I forget, but don't worry. It's been documented, and we'll cover that. So while you're there.
I'm going to the anomaly. You're going to the UFO stand.
Yep, that's right.
Oh, so, boy.
So we're going to have to.
Compare notes.
Well, maybe we'll just both be reporting at the same time. We might have to.
I'm like, man, I'm in the middle of the anomaly.
I was like, oh man, there's so many cool UFOs out here.
There's so many lights and colors.
There's a dead cow down there without a brain, but
its neck bones are clean.
All right. Lastly, we have another triangle, the Bridgewater Triangle. The Bridgewater Triangle is an area about 200 square miles in the southeastern Massachusetts, just south of Boston. It's like an all-you-can-eat buffet of the supernatural.
Ooh.
Among other things, the area has been subject to numerous cryptozoological sightings since 1970s. There have been several reports of tall, hairy, ape-like creatures roaming the swamp. There have also been numerous sightings of thunderbirds, giant pterodactyl-like creatures that have been fighting in midair. In 1976, there was a report of a man who saw a giant, ghostly, red-eyed dog rip the throats out of two of his ponies. Besides these cryptids, there have been numerous reports of mutilated animals, mainly cows and calves, in the region. Some credit these mutilations to satanic cults, but no one has come forward, and no one even knows where the animals come from. As if that weren't enough, the Bridgewater Triangle is a hotbed of UFO sightings dating all the way back to 1760, where a sphere of fire was reportedly seen hovering over New England. Since then, there have been numerous sightings of unexplained objects in the sky, including mysterious black helicopters. One from 1976 describes two UFOs landing along Route 44 near the city of Taunton, and another from 1994 recounts a strange triangular object with red and white lights seen by Bridgewater law enforcement officer. In 1908, on Halloween night, two undertakers who were traveling to Bridgewater noticed in the sky what looked like a giant lantern. They watched it for almost 40 minutes before it disappeared. Bermuda isn't looking so bad after all.
I don't want any part of Bridgewater, yeah.
No, I'll stay away from there. But
I'm not going there.
Yeah, but I mean... So, you know, you say something about the Bermuda Triangle and all the mysterious happenings and all these strange encounters, but man, and what it turns out to be is you don't not necessarily got to go through the Bermuda Triangle to get yourself caught up in some craziness.
Strange things happen everywhere.
Yeah, strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Bill and Ted's.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I really liked discussing the topic of the Bermuda Triangle and all these other interesting places.
Me too, man.
And hopefully, you know, with, you know, all jokes aside, hopefully one day in the future, you know, we can go and like check like one of these places out and like, you know, report and maybe even do our podcast from there. That would be beast.
That would be cool. We better do it soon because I'm as I get older, I lose my nerve a little bit.
We'll shoot for maybe in the next year or so.
Maybe a haunted prison.
Ooh, I like that idea.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. That's pretty much all I have on the subject of all these different triangles and crazy areas. You got anything else you want to add on this topic, Steve?
I just you know, I feel bad for the people that have lost their lives in places that just are inexplicably strange like
that. Absolutely, absolutely.
And I hope that somehow in the future we can solve all of the mysteries and prevent it from happening again.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, one thing I wanted to say, being the fact that we have done a couple episodes on the Mandela effect, I had just read recently that there is a movie in the making about the Mandela effect, and hopefully that comes out within the next year or so, because that'll be interesting to see. But also, sticking with you know, our topic of the unknown and UFOs and aliens of that nature, tomorrow, May 9th, there's going to be a movie released called Unacknowledged. Some of you may be aware of it. It's a film put together by Dr. Stephen Greer, and it is going to have a lot of great information out there about UFOs and unacknowledged special access projects. So if you're into that, or you're looking for something really great to watch here in the real near future, you can go out to iTunes and you can download it and watch it, or you can go to thedisclosureproject.com and you can order the DVD or the book. From what I understand, the book has a lot of good information in it as well. But I will definitely be checking out this movie. So
absolutely.
Just wanted to put that out there. But, well, I had a lot of fun here tonight. I hope you all did too. And until next time, I'm Foltz.
And I'm Steve.
And we'll see you next time. Take care of one another. Bye-bye.